Postdoc transformation. Postdoc transformation. Postdoc transformation. Invest in your postdoc transformation. Welcome to the seasonal show for scientists leaping into business. In every sponsored episode, we are happy to recommend employers of choice for you. Make sure to check your readiness to leap out of science with us for free, as linked in the show notes. For your career transition, we offer customized career transition e-courses and memberships also at graduate schools all over the world. Maybe yours too. And if your university isn't yet our customer, enroll in your free email course for career transition made simple, as linked in the show notes. I'm your host, Professor Dr. Eleanor Sui Winkles, with my team who is rooting for you. And let's build your postdoc transformation with this episode. Hello, Postdoc Transformer. In this episode of the Postdoc Transformation Show, you have the pleasure to be inspired for your high impact development journey by no one less than Dr. Christine Zolf, who is the Accenture Munich Innovation Hub Director in Germany. She's earned a PhD in sociology, and she also studied psychology and intercultural communication. So that's really relevant for also my own students. And you can connect with her on LinkedIn, as linked in the show notes. Christine and I are both Panda members, so we both care for diversity and inclusion with a focus on female empowerment and education for all. She's also a board member for a social enterprise, and she's also an artist, and you can find her cut and glued collages on Instagram, as linked in the show notes. But she's also a mom of two children. So without further ado, welcome to the stage. I'm so glad to have you here, Christine, and I'm happy to introduce you to my community of Postdoc Transformers, the scientists leaping into business. Christine, can you share your journey from being a master and PhD in sociology on elite communication to your current role as a principal director in a global consulting company? And can you highlight your key transitions and challenges?
With pleasure, and thank you for having me, Ellie. So when I look back, I guess the red thread is that I always wanted to change something in the world. And I tried that when I was a teenage girl in school, and I tried to implement new subjects in Bavarian schools. I wanted that we are being taught emotional intelligence, etc. None of that worked. And I like to look at that as a trigger for me deciding to study sociology, psychology, to understand why the world ticks as she ticks and why people and organizations are so change reluctant. Then I fell in love with actually researching and, as you said, deep dived into elite, and then returned to the urge of wanting to change the world. So I endeavored a bit where I could maybe do that. And my first attempt was in learning in large corporates while I was still doing research and writing my PhD. And I found really important, maybe not yet where I want to be, because you always communicate or teach something, but you're rather far away from where decisions are being made. Then I had a next hypothesis. I guess that's the social scientist going also in terms of jobs, hypothesis by hypothesis. Next one was, if I want to change the world, maybe it's good to be working for a foundation and just have an abundance of network, brains, organizations, and money to work with to do that. So I did that for half a year, and then coincidentally met my first consulting boss at an event we hosted there. While I was already thinking that probably project management, which is a large part of what you actually do when you work in a foundation, is something I can do, but not necessarily love to do. So, and by meeting Matthias, I ended up as the first employed consultant in a fresh startup. And they had the idea to mix classic strategic consulting, old school, find the North Star, you pave the way, with very modern, systemic, and even therapeutic infused leadership development. And I thought that's a great place to start. I always had a bit of fear to become sort of a copycat of my first bosses or too corporate culturally. And for that, my first job was perfect because both founders and leaders I worked for were so different. It was male, female, different backgrounds in academia, but also their work history before they funded the company, that I had the feeling if I join there, I'm going to become some sort of my own version of consultant and not a copy of someone, which I hope.
Or two.
And then after a few years there and having had my first daughter, I decided to move on and explore bigger contexts. Because if you grow up in a startup, it's a bit like working in a family-owned company as well. And then maybe it's teenage years again, as in like work teenage years where you have to leave home and figure out what you want to do. And ever since I'm part of that big, lovely consulting company jungle, I like to call it, because there's so many opportunities in different areas I can now work in.
Very cool. And I can attest to that, that you are very unique. We have met at work and I found you very inspiring, and not to be sort of like a copycat of someone I know. And that's why I thought of asking you for the Postdoc Transformation Show, because I want you to inspire my community as well.
And once you have determined your readiness to leap and want to transition into business or industries, then you can enroll in your free email course with 10 actionable, bingeable email lessons until you start your job in business. You'll get 10 emails like this. Number 1, how to leap out of science. Number 2, how to build your sustainable LinkedIn profile. Number 3, how to read social media and network. Number 4, how to research your favorite jobs and employers. Number 5, how to do informational interviews to get insights. Number 6, how to create your customized applications with ChatGPT. Number 7, how to prepare your thesis from a business point of view. Number 8, how to apply to your favorite employers. Number 9, how to choose the right job offer. Number 10, how to prepare for your new job.
So, in that very first job in business, when you were at a startup, how were you able to leverage your background in social science to excel also in corporate world and maybe still today? Are you still a scientist, or do you think that that has worn off and melted into something new?
Yeah, I still am a very proud sociologist. And I also like to mention terms. I learned to translate that. I admit that the first year learning to be a consultant was a bit harsh. If you come from German sociology, we write 12 line long sentences, and as many sentences you can put in, the better. And so it was kind of hard to get down to 8 bullet points on a slide. That, I guess, is how you bring across things. And there you have to adapt to every new organizational culture, be it a university, company A, company B, etc. The actual things I learned in sociology, psychology, are the tools I still use to drive change, to help parts of organizations transform, to help humans transform, because that's the only tools we have. And then I can wrap them in the buzzwords of the hour, etc. But I find it definitely is a very practical set of tools I have.
So I can absolutely relate to that, because I came into that global consulting company after having 2 years in a corporate experience. So all of your experience I already had when I came as a lateral hire, it was easier for me in consulting.
Yeah.
So Christine, in your experience, when mentioned looking up to role models and thinking of what can you emulate and what not to find your own way, how important was networking for you when you transitioned from academia to the business sector? Because you said that you were lucky to land in a consulting startup. Did you find it just luckily, or did you network your way? And from there, from the startup, did you network also into the big consulting group? Because you said that you had this conference, but did you do something else outside of that?
So when I think about networking, a Picasso quote actually comes to my mind. Like Picasso said, inspiration exists, but it has to find you working. And I think it's the same with networking. So building networks, and then there is this luck of in the right room at the right moment, or you talk to a friend and she says, oh, my partner just knows about a free job posting. So I guess it's a mix. You can't do super structured networking a month before you're looking for a new job. Doesn't really do the trick. But kind of naturally, I always felt, for me, it's important to have a vivid network that inspires me and that carries me through a longer term of time. And then I can rely on that and pull from that. And I think I already started networking a lot in the university. So we built the first female network of sociologists in Munich while I was studying and researching. And I found that always invaluable for getting input, being supported, being empowered. When I felt, oh, I can't apply for that talk, there was always someone who said, go for it. And it was peers in that network, but definitely also my academic mentor who helped me. And I carried that through and it changed over time. But I certainly would say I do a lot of nurturing and investing also in my network. Yeah, so I guess that's the recommendation. Do that. It's fun. It's just inspiration. And we should not travel alone through whatever, life and job.
That is well put. We shouldn't travel alone.
And did you know that we offer deep dive e-course workshops and memberships at graduate schools, maybe also at yours in the future? Ask your graduate school coordinator whether they want to book my services so that I can deliver them to you 24/7, 365 on your mobile device. And even better, if you get us paid by your grad school, we will pay you 50% recurring sales commissions. So you will earn money with us as we help you and your PhD besties to transition into business. We can build a poster transformation together. Woohoo!
So you are a principal director and you also hire and onboard new employees into your team and into your unit. Do you also hire a lot of PhD candidates or PhD holders? And if so, what do you think is their biggest unique value proposition? How can they capitalize on their research and scientific skills in general, especially at consulting?
The type of roles I hire for, be they strategy focused, be they change and transformation focused, or I do a lot in innovation, a PhD never hurts because it brings you the T-shaped profile. Yeah, you did dive into a topic and it's hard at times. I mean, if someone comes with a solid academic track record, the prejudice I have then when I first talk to that person is, oh, he or she is able to deal with complexity, to follow a strict or any timeline, to navigate also different forms of working. You have to think, you have to write, you have to debate and dispute about what you do. I find that invaluable. At the same time, I then always look very carefully for the ability to go up in the other parts of the T. So what do I do when I have my PhD in robotics? Will I also be able to talk straight to someone who's into other fields? That's the thing we as scientists need to prove in the first interviews, that we're able to do more than science.
And do you think that consulting is a receptive field for PhD holders? I had the impression that almost everyone in our company that we shared for a couple of years, almost everyone had a doctorate title. So was it like just the areas where I was located, or what is your overall impression?
My overall impression is I wouldn't say we have too many PhD holders, actually, maybe a very elite corner of the company where you were sitting in. It certainly depends. Like in innovation, where we actually work on next gen computing or something, a lot of colleagues do come with an academic background. Let's say if we look into finance, controlling, supply chain, etc. It certainly is not a prerequisite. I'm wondering if it gives us more freedom if we do come with a PhD. I always felt that the PhD, you become a bit subject agnostic, as in people see, oh, someone did independent research on a topic, and it's not so much about, oh, what specifically did you do? And you're then not bound to the content that much. I guess that would be the PhD advertising. It gives you freedom. And it gives you, if you enter the corporate world, it gives you credibility. And I mean, I always did work with leaders and develop leadership trainings, etc., even when I joined consulting, so without having old gray hair to offer. And I felt that the PhD helped. Yeah, that people respect you because you obviously know something.
Yeah, it's an external validation. It comes in handy if you are underrepresented, underprivileged, and when you're a woman, young, then at least a doctor title helps you to get the attention.
From episode 1 and counting, I have proudly hosted all our Postdoc Transformation Show episodes on Podbean. As a former IT strategy consultant, I have high requirements on my tech stack, and Podbean is my perfect fit for a podcast host. If you want to create your own individual podcast or one for, you know, internal upskilling and communications within a company, DM or email me Podbean so I can share my experience and consult you. You can also use my affiliate links for perks launching your own podcast with Podbean.
Are you wondering how I do my videos and my podcasts in my spare time? Well, Descript is the video and audio editor that I use and I wish I had had since day one of my Postdoc Transformation Show. Descript's AI-powered features make it really easy for me to create branded, long-form, and short-form content for my TikTok, Instagram, Pinterest, X, Threads, YouTube, LinkedIn game, and whatever it is. Since my first remote interview with international guests from all over the place, I fell in love with their newly acquired Squadcast feature. So all English interviews are transcribed with high accuracy despite the different accents of my guests, mine including. And best of all, I am editing words and not sound waves. They are constantly building new AI-powered features which have helped me to efficiently and effectively promote my business, Postdoc Transformation, and that's so invaluable as a working mom and active professor. So check it out with my affiliate link in the show notes for launching your own podcast, video show, or even B2B for your internal communication and trainings.
And when you study sociology, the extra is, at least with my fields of research, you come across Machiavelli and a lot of power theories. And I guess that also helps as a knowledge bucket to have with you.
Absolutely. I totally agree because I'm a psychologist as well. And the first years in business, they were like, oh my God, this is so, so interesting to see being hypothesis driven. So why are they doing this? I mean, could they not see that this would be coming? And if they do this, then this will happen. Mm-hmm. Let's see whether this will happen because this is like a hypothesis and like an experiment in real life. So I can absolutely relate to that. When you look back into your PhD and all your education that you gained, not just the content of Machiavelli itself, that was, maybe you were lucky, obviously, with the topics that you had, but we're talking also with historians, we're talking about, you know, whatever social arts, whatever STEM, etc. Are there any things that you can sort of like a pattern see that are transferable from a very scientific education to business as such? Because you are also experienced with not just consultants in consulting business, but also with the corporate side, the clients when you were working there. You also saw people with a doctor's title, without. Do you see anything that is sort of like helpful? What maybe an early career scientist today should double down already now before leaping into business?
I certainly would say that dealing with complexity and being able to slice a topic, and you have to do that the moment you try to find the question you're going to research on, right? Way too big, what's out there? Not to lose that ability to say, yes, this is the broader context for now, this meeting, this project, this strategy, we focus on that particular pillar. I think that is a really valuable thing to transfer from academia into business. I'd love to see us in corporate using more of the art of the good argument, which I think we train in academia. There is a thesis, an antithesis, etc. And in the hectic of business, that sometimes gets lost because if in a 30-minute alignment call, there's no time for the full process. Probably that's more a wish to us already in the corporate world to remember that there is this quality of thinking we once learned and we might want to use.
And now it's time to thank Company ABC, who sponsors this episode of the Postdoc Transformation Show. I would now be reading the company's answers to one of six bold questions so that you can choose to apply. For example, number one, describe your most valuable experts versus leaders in your company. Have they typically earned a doctor title? Number two, for whichever company roles or units do you encourage somebody with a doctor title to apply? Number three, how would you describe your organizational culture in which your most valuable experts and leaders thrive in? To nominate an employer of choice so that we can ask our informative bold questions, let us know via the click on the link. If you are a company representative, like in recruiting and employer branding, and now you want your company to be highlighted as an employer of choice for our audience, you can become a sponsor of a dedicated Postdoc Transformation Show episode. Just click on the link in the show notes. And now, back to the Postdoc Transformation episode.
And the third thing is, if I write a PhD, there is a passion behind it. And if we don't lose that, I'm searching for things that make my eyes sparkle. Like, I mean, a lot of us spend a lot of time to nail down what we actually do research on because it feels so important to find that and not to get lost in corporate. And there always is a job and you could do it and da-da-da. But trying to remember that moment, oh yeah, that's interesting, I'm going to do that. And search for that in business as well, which is a very, I think you can't train it in a way, but maybe the advice is to really remember that feeling well, because you might want to look for it later to not get lost in. There's a beautiful picture of the giant hairball, like these hairballs we have under our beds, and large scale organizations can be described as that. They're a bit grayish, foggy. You can get sucked in and then it's really dark and unpleasant. But you need the hairball. It pays your bills. It is the structure you work in. It is also where you contribute to, but you might want to orbit around it. There's a great book of a creative called Orbiting the Giant Hairball. And maybe that's a recommendation, at least for the nerdy people who like to look at humans and organizations.
That's a great recommendation. And from what you were sharing with us, I can see that there are traits that maybe a scientist leaping into business and also thriving into business, sucked into a successful career, should maybe keep, at least reflect on how far has he or she come, and is that still okay, and are you content with that? Because it's always the conscious reflection on things that you have been socialized. Is it good or bad? But also, are you happy with that or no? So yeah. When you reflect on your own journey, were the moments when you questioned yourself, your decision, whether transitioning into business was the good thing, or have you ever thought that you want to come back to academia? And how did you overcome these doubts and uncertainty?
Have you found this episode so far helpful for yourself? Well, maybe you can subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or wherever you get our show. And also, share this episode with your PhD bestie, because that would encourage us to help the underprivileged, underrepresented, and underserved early career scientists leaping into business. This would also ensure that you don't miss a future episode. Also, our subscription and listening numbers are key for finding the right sponsors for our show so that we can help you for free. And now, back to the show.
I feel funnily trapped because I return to the thought of, do I want to return to academia? Do I want to do teaching and research again yearly, I guess? I might also be just a bit of an overthinker. But the attractiveness of teaching, of being able to find out new things and to then instantly share that, and just to have time to read, because reading and thinking is the core job. That is something that still is super attractive to me. So I can totally see a third career in returning to doing more of that. I never regretted that I left academia because I wanted to feel active and change something on a living system. I felt at that time when I left after having written my PhD, I felt intimidated or I was afraid to get lost in an ivory tower and then write beautiful texts that maybe no one reads, that don't have an impact, which like all fears is not the most rational, but I guess the mix of that ivory tower fear and the will to do something very actively lured me away, and the desire to think and share and grow humans would bring me back.
And actually, you're not alone. We were entrenched in academia for a reason. And then not all of us went out because they wanted to, but maybe they had to. Or maybe there were better opportunities and they had to capitalize on these. But I think looking back and also thinking, is that all? Maybe there is something else in my autumn of life or winter of life. And actually, my episode of the best reasons to come back to academia after having thrived in business is one of the most favorite episodes. And that is really funny for me because my show is about leaping into business. I did this for a partner at a global consultancy. So not us, but another company. So it was a conversation on LinkedIn back and forth and was like, maybe I should. Here are the reasons. And if these are the reasons, then come back. But if not, then... So you're not alone in that.
That's good. That's good.
Hey, Postdoc Transformer, are you curious to ask professors, principal investigators, visiting scientists, postdocs, PhD students, and candidates some in-depth life and career-guiding questions? But it feels cringe, so you end up not asking? Buy our Postdoc Transformation card game to have more fun and valuable insights in your journal club, lab and mentoring meetings, lab rotations, during conferences, panels, and breaks at the Mensa. You'll get 10 intriguing mentoring questions per career level. So 10 for PhD students, 10 for postdocs, 10 for professors, 10 for parental scientists, underprivileged and underrepresented and underserved scientists. Check them out with our discount coupon on the Postdoc Transformation shop linked on postdoctransformation.com.
And I hope we develop as a society more towards patchwork work biographies as well. So
it will.
I talked to a colleague over lunch and she worked in consulting, then left to do her PhD. Now she returned and we shared that wouldn't it be nice to also be researching again and teaching. And we had the idea to why not find models like we share a leadership role in corporate and we share an academic role, so we could have both worlds. So I guess if we can, maybe we can allow ourselves to make
it would absolutely benefit students because students need this mix of theory but also that is hands-on applied in business. And to be honest, most of my colleagues, if they have ever been in business, that is like a decade ago. So the way I run my own business is really helping me to create examples that are up to date. I use AI. I'm on Instagram, on TikTok, and I wouldn't be if I wouldn't have a business. If I were a professor, then I would be probably thinking, why would I be there? That's hilarious. But as I have a business that I want to market, I need to understand how marketing mechanisms work today. And it's certainly different. Because TikTok and Instagram has never existed 10 years ago. So this continuous learning is important for me. And I think most of us ex-scientists in business can also relate to that. So if you can relate to that, how do you do continuous learning? I mean, consulting, I always thought that it's very much triggering me to learn even more and even more. So was that only my assumption or my experience? Or would you agree that consulting is a great place to learn even more?
It is a great place to learn for the reason just that you are immersed in so many contexts each client is new. And if I look at my trade of change management, for example, obviously the mechanisms are the same for small companies, big companies, humans, and then it looks different every time. So you're kind of like ethnographically endeavoring into new worlds with each project. That certainly drives learning, but also, as you said, new technologies. And also sitting down and reflecting. So I really like that we do more of that with Agile becoming one of the normal ways of doing work. I found that also in the first years when I worked as a consultant, I had a partner in crime. We started new jobs at the same day, her PhD as a psychologist and I a consulting role. And then we met every month virtually to exchange, what did I observe and what do I learn from that? And what am I curious about for the next month? We always had I want to focus on observing how they do this and that in this company, or I want to learn a new method or something. And having that partner in crime and being able to talk to Yvonne and just reflecting and having also that date in the calendar, I think helped me a lot to develop and grow. And then I had, because depending on how much you're in love with your subject, I didn't want to stop reading sociological books and texts, but I felt it's definitely something you really need a deadline for, because it's not always pure fun, even if you enjoy it. So I had a reading group formed when I left academia, and we really did read theoretical texts, some more hands-on stuff, and then always reflected on how we are using it. And we were a super diverse group. So we had someone working in the management of a large brewery, which is, I guess, what you come across when you live in Munich. Someone who worked in politics, me in consulting. So we had various professions, various academic backgrounds, a shared interest for systemic literature in the broadest sense. And that taught me a lot. And we did it, I think, over 7 years. And then people moved, had children. So we lost that thread. And I really enjoyed it and would highly recommend to have nerd groups of any kind. In chemistry, I will ask that dear friend who has her PhD in chemistry if she has secret chemist meetings where they experiment.
That really is great, because I was actually asking you about support mechanisms that you developed this idea and presented that to me, that it really is even better, because if you're thinking of what is really in my interest and you keep that for several years, meeting with several people who may have moved into different areas also, in then by nature you will find a lot of inspiration, because they have all been interested by that specific topic, but yeah, then also they branched out professionally into different things. And with those people, you build relationships. Mm-hmm. And building relationships is the foundation to network. You're not going to ask someone transactionally, do this and then I'll do that. But instead, you have to find out who the people are. And you found out who they are because you were sharing the same interests on your topics. And I think that PhDs who are leaping into business, they need to accept that they are different. And they should not just throw that away, but instead they should keep and cherish that and maybe use that as a springboard to learn more from other areas of business, but also maybe also from life, so that they can be inspired for their own professional journeys. Because what I think is crucial for scientists is that they don't have any role models. Mm-hmm. If you're socialized in graduate school, then all you know is all these professors who all behave very similarly. That's gravitation, right? Mm-hmm. So to be successful in academia, you have to sort of like become like this. And that's what you also said, that you don't want to do the copycat thing, but it's very hard to do this. And to be honest, I'm a professor who also had this business experience, and that's why I am different. Yeah. I probably would have been the same like all my other colleagues if I had never been in business.
I built my post-doc transformation as a digital business, and I chose ActiveCampaign to be the centerpiece of all my services, like email course, podcast, newsletter, show notes, website, sales page, merch shop, forms, whatever it is, as needed. As a former IT strategy consultant, I have high requirements on my tech stack, and ActiveCampaign is a must-have recommendation. I use it daily. If you want to create your own digital business with various lead magnets and funnel options, DM or email me ActiveCampaign so I can share my experience and consult you. You can also use my affiliate links for perks launching your own digital business with ActiveCampaign.
And last question for you is, you inspire me. So when you think big, what are your plans for the future? Aside from thinking of maybe coming back to academia, is there more in your life, Christine?
I might come back to academia. I just started, and then in corporate or consulting, I just started a new role where I can hopefully bring a lot of what I learned so far to it, shaping an active network, cluster, hub to thrive innovation. That already is a lot of excitement, so I wouldn't be at that point in time. I just started that. I'm not able to say, oh, and then next thing should be this and that, because I want to master that right now. And I also always had an artistic practice. I do collages, and I do that since my teenage years as well. And I felt over the last 10 years that I really need to do more of that. One big thing for me is integrating the art into the rest of my life. Maybe I'm not the artist who is going to be shown at the next Venice Biennale, but I like to explore and experiment with bringing artistic practices into consulting when I work with teams or with individuals. How can the beauty and the experience that lies in art fuel, inspire, or irritate what we do in business?
That is wonderful.
Remember, you are a postdoc transformer. You are highly intelligent, well-educated, a bachelor, master, and maybe you have already your doctor under your belt, or you are a postdoc. You are internationally experienced, fluent in English, a leader and expert in your prior research field. You're resilient, brilliant in adaptation and problem solving. You are eager to bring in the transferable and monetizable skills needed in many companies to embrace the future and to become or remain an innovator in their markets.
Christine, well, what is your take on having a role model?
Role models are partners in crime, where I can take one thing they do really greatly and then somehow puzzle it into how I try to work and lead and be. And I just met yesterday one of my senior colleagues who was my boss for a long time. And he at that time said, you need to decide if you want to make a difference or if you want to be fully integrated and the same with everyone in one group. And he had totally forgotten that he had said that sentence. But for me, in that moment, he had role model clarity very much, as in just very openly stating about your next career steps and decide if you want to be same or different. And to me, that meant a lot. So I guess that's a mix of sponsor and role model. Carried me a long way. And I guess if you think about moving from academia to corporate, you most certainly are different when you walk through the door and find a balance of that. So I found my tribe where I feel same, so I can happily be making a difference in other places.
Do you want a transcript of our episode? And our episode sponsors answers to all six bold questions so that you can choose to apply? Do you want to nominate your potential employer of choice so that we can ask them our bold questions? For all of that, click on our links in our show notes and on our website, www.postdoctransformation.com. Remember to check your readiness to leap out of science and to enroll in our free email course, Career Transition Made Simple. Thanks for your attention. I'm Professor Dr. Eleanor Zoe Winkles, the host of your seasonal Postdoc Transformation Show. Hey, you're still here? And you are a future HR or talent management leader? Well, I want to talk to you about a powerful tool that can transform the way organizations communicate internally. How about creating a podcast like this one? In today's fast-paced business world, effective communication is the cornerstone of success. So how can you engage your employees, convey your company's culture, and share knowledge in a dynamic, authentic, and accessible way? Well, to me, the answer lies in podcasting, obviously. So picture this, a podcast tailor-made for your organization where you and your real employees and leaders share success stories and updates in a conversational, engaging format. It's like having your own radio show, but with a corporate twist, absolutely branded. Now, why should you consider this as a future HR and talent management professional? Well, podcasts are accessible. So your employees can tune in during their daily commute, while multitasking, off screen or walking, and it's flexible and it can be easily repurposed in different formats and languages. You know what I'm talking about, right? So it actually humanizes your organization, and podcasts allow you to bring a company's culture to life. You can interview leaders, team members, and highlight what makes your workplace unique and connect with those team members who are far away or on parental leave when they are most receptive for your internal communication. And in the era of AI-generated communications, a podcast with your business leaders in real life is a real human way to reach your employees. You can inform your people every day, everywhere, on demand, and not just during the typical onboarding and promotion seasons. Lastly, it's a platform for continuous learning. Whether it's training materials, leadership insights, or industry trends, podcasts keep your team informed and inspired. So, as you prepare to step into the world of HR, talent management, and leadership, consider the impact you can make by introducing a corporate podcast. It's a game changer for internal communications and aligns perfectly with a modern work environment. So, are you ready to inform with a human touch? Create a podcast with me. I'm Eleanor Sui Winkles, the host of the Post of Transformation show. Do you need inspiration? Well, you can get a list of free 30 sample episode titles to be customized for your company. Just enter your email address on our company podcast form on postdoctransformation.com. Postdoc Transformation.